claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
November 9th, 1989. History is made. The Berlin Wall falls. Years pass. Decades end. A new century is born. In 2021, one wall remains at Revolution Radio. The wall between Studio A, the Wisdom Circle, and Studio B, the Raw Deal. The wall falls. History is made. Wisdom Circle plus Raw Deal equals the event. James Fetzer. David Scorpio. Giuseppe Battangelo. History is made. And now, the event.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host today on The Event, where I regret Giuseppe and Scorpio are not with us today. They are preoccupied with various projects that are of considerable import and significance. I'm, however, delighted to be here with you today with some extremely important developments. If you check out my blog, you'll find the latest is a Mike Adams interview with Dr. Brian Artis, who reveals bombshell evidence about the origin of COVID, the mRNA vaccines, and remdesivir. This is very disturbing stuff. Stu Peters had done an interview previously with him, and Mike Adams has now followed up on a Watch the Water video. Turns out to be too large for me to upload here directly to my site, but it's on my BitChute channel, Jim Fetzer. You'll want to watch it. Joe Olson and Michael Ivey reviewed it with me on Need to Know yesterday, which you'll also find on my blog, including some segments where we think he's got it right. Now, after watching our discussion, Robert Davis sought to confirm Dr. Artis' research and found a study from the University of Arizona linking COVID deaths with snake venom, because that is what we find here. Need to Know News, Texas Tuesday, 12 April 2022, with Joe Olson and Michael Ivey, major COVID development. The world premiere of Watch the Water may have nailed what's been going on in the role of distraction and disinformation in promoting the fake COVID pandemic and the vax, where it appears, oddly enough, that snake venom may be playing a crucial role. Fascinating stuff. Here's the article Robert Davis discovered. University of Arizona researchers find link between COVID deaths and snake venom. Snakes are starting to play a big role in COVID-19 research. Scientists from the University of Arizona have discovered an enzyme similar to one found in rattlesnake venom that could be driving the COVID-19 death. We found evidence that there was an enzyme, a snake-like enzyme, in the blood of people who were in extraordinarily high levels, said Dr. Floyd Quinton, the senior author of the study with the University of Arizona College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. Mike Adams has interviewed him. It's available on my blog. Hopefully we can hear it here right now. We got a problem here. I'm going to work on this, see if I can get it better. See if you can hear it better here. Well, I got it. We've got to pull it up. Wow. Yeah, stand by. Yes, there is a link, and yes, that's what we need. Here we go. Here we go. We're going to get this going for you, and I'm very sorry about that. I had it uploaded in my Zoom, and it wasn't playing.
Welcome to Brighteon.tv. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon. Today we're joined by Dr. Brian Artis, who has a very special, urgent, I would say critical for humanity special report that he's going to be sharing with us over the next few minutes. He's got even a presentation and a deep discussion. Now, for those of you who are trying to take this information down, I want you to understand, if you're watching this, it's already out, so you can't do that. Good luck with that. This is getting out. The truth shall prevail. And I want to appreciate all of you and say thank you for watching today, and feel free to share this interview on other platforms as well. In fact, the more we distribute this interview, the better it is for humanity. Dr. Brian Artis, it is always an honor to speak with you. Welcome to the studio.
I'm so excited to be here, actually. Your studio is awesome, and I really do love the opportunity to participate with Brighteon.tv, and thank you for all you do for providing uncensorable material for a lot of us.
Well, that's our specialty, is not getting censored, of course, but you are awesome in your work and your show and what you've been doing. I just want to thank you, because you have helped inform so many people that, you know, allegedly you're now on Big Pharma's hit list of people for them to try to take down or silence. So we want to offer you prayers and blessings for your protection. We know you're safe here, but, you know, be safe as you're moving around out there.
Yeah, I really do appreciate that. And supposedly I'm at the top of that list per Dr. Zev Zelenko, right?
Wow. So Brian Artis, number one.
Supposedly right number there. One. So
I tell you what.
What we're about to go over, and what has shortly been disclosed to some people, we're trying to reach this to as many audiences as people around the world, because this information is relevant to the entire world, and not everybody watches every platform. So you actually are the first person I came and talked to about this ever.
Oh, wow. Wow. But that was all a private conversation. Now you're ready to share it publicly.
That was a very private, personal conversation, because I was worried about the things that I was uncovering.
Yeah.
And I wanted your input, knowing some of your background. And there's just very few people I thought I could trust with this information out of the gate.
Well,
you were the first.
There's very few people who can freak me out with information, and you're one of those people, because when you told me what you had found, I was freaking out. And again, I'm hard to freak out because I've been through a lot. But let's just jump into it, okay? Mm-hmm. I just want to remind you, and for those of you watching, you know, this, we're going to have your slides on the screen behind you, and I'm actually the slide controller today, but you tell me, you know, when to go next, and we're also going to put these in the video so people can read them. Is this going to be available as some kind of a downloadable PDF as well?
We can make it that way on our site.
Okay.
Give out
your website for the audience.
So my website is thedrartisshow.com, thedrartisshow.com.
Got it.
Doctors just shortened to DR.
Okay, perfect.
We'll make sure that's there.
All right. Well, where do we begin?
All right. So for anybody who's already seen somewhat of the story, something happened on December 1st of 2021. We're in the beginning of April of 2022. So this only happened about 4 months ago. I received a text from a medical doctor that you know, I know, I won't say his name here, but he sent me a text that appeared to be very random to me and totally unrelated to COVID. But this is what happened, so I want to tell the story. I went on an interview on InfoWars, and I was being interviewed by Kate Daly, who's a great host, sometimes comes in there and co-hosts for InfoWars, other shows. She'd asked me to come on and actually talk about monoclonal antibodies and my thoughts on monoclonal antibodies. And I agreed to do it. I had these six studies that I just received actually from another doctor I really love and admire and trust. And my viewpoints on monoclonal antibodies based on those research studies were, I have concerns long term about the use of these monoclonal antibodies because the studies I had received all were saying the monoclonal antibodies were being derived from cancer cells of the spleens of pigs.
Right.
And I remember thinking, why in the world would we inject that into a human being without knowing what the long-term possible mutagenic or carcinogenic effects might occur? So I was on InfoWars just bad-mouthing monoclonal antibodies. I mean, I was, like, based on these research studies. My concern was not that people with COVID-19 were being treated with it and they were surviving. The truth was, for me at the time, 99.997% of all people were surviving COVID anyway. It really doesn't matter what you use for early treatment. So the early treatment options, you should be weighing the risk and benefits.
Well, of course, yeah.
Because what if there's long-term negative results of monoclonal antibodies?
Right.
So this interview I did, as a result, this medical doctor sent me a text after he had been notified that I was bad-mouthing an early treatment for COVID that was working and this individual was using with a 100% success rate with COVID. He had sent me a text, and this is what the text said. Now, I hadn't talked to him in weeks. He just sent me this text, and it said, "Hey, Dr. Artis, if you got bit by a rattlesnake, would you go to a hospital and get antivenom?" Now, the truth is, I didn't see the text until December 18th. So it was like 2.5 weeks later. In between that period, I saw this doctor at a speaking event. And he walks right up to me as I see him, and he goes, "Hey, Dr. Artis, can you do me a favor from now on? When you go into the media, can you just continue to encourage people to stay away from hospitals and just seek early treatment instead of talking on early treatments?" And I was like,
so he's trying to shut down your speech on being critical about any kind of these treatments.
Right. I knew he wanted me to not talk about monoclonal antibodies. He must have been told about the interview on InfoWars.
Okay.
Because he said it was creating conflict for people that knew him and were sending people to him to do monoclonal antibodies, but they respected me, respected him, and they thought that was a conflicting scenario.
Well, so, I would say people start with vitamin D. Start with the simple things.
Right.
Zinc, you know.
I agree. But I do have great respect for this guy. So when he came to me, I looked at him and I said, yes, I can do that. I can continue to push people to early treatment because by far, early treatment options are way safer than going into a hospital and getting remdesivir and being vented to death. So anything is better than going there. So I reasoned that real quick and told him that. It was about a week after I saw him, I went to go send him a text when I see this text from December 1st that reads, "Hey, Dr. Artis, if you got bit by a rattlesnake, would you go get antivenom?" And I remember looking at the text bewildered because what does this got to do with COVID? Like, nothing. Yeah, so when I say it changed my whole life when I actually read this text, this is what happened. I knew this guy admired, used, and had success with monoclonal antibodies. But I didn't know anything about being bit by snakes. I didn't know anything about antivenom. So I was trying to figure out why he sent me this text. I didn't respond to him. I just looked at the text 2 weeks later, and I was trying to reason in my mind, why would he send me this text? First thing I knew I had to figure out was, he knows I would say yes to that question. Like, inherently, I would go, of course I'm going to go get antivenom if I get bit by a rattlesnake. I mean, wouldn't you? I mean, I would want antivenom. I don't know if I'm going to die. I would go get antivenom. I knew I would say yes. So I had to know what he was trying to trigger me to say yes to.
Yeah, because the metaphor that he is then describing is basically saying that COVID is like a snake venom and that the monoclonal antibodies are anti-venom. That's what he was trying to
That is not what I thought, actually.
Oh, okay.
This is what happened to me. I was like, anti-venom? What is it about anti-venom? I don't know. So I had to go look it up. I was like, what is anti-venom made from? Or what is anti-venom? Only to learn online. Remember, I'm a chiropractor, acupuncturist. I didn't know this. Only to learn online that anti-venom is monoclonal antibodies or polyclonal antibodies. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. So all of a sudden, I was like, oh, this is why he sent me this text. Was to get me to say, you would trust monoclonal antibodies if you got bit by a snake. And I was like, well, yes, I would. Was I wrong? All of a sudden, I was like, wait a minute, am I wrong to trust monoclonal antibodies? And Mike, I cannot even exaggerate. I actually went into my shower, where's my think tank? I literally was in there for like an hour, just standing in the water, my hands up against the wall, and I am going through everything related to monoclonal antibodies that I thought I was right about. And it created this whirlwind rabbit hole of research for the next 4 months, which has led to what we're going to unveil today. This is how it went. I'm in the shower and I'm like, monoclonal antibodies are anti-venom, and anti-venom is a source of monoclonal antibodies. Then immediately I thought, does the CDC, the NIH, or the FDA recommend monoclonal antibodies for COVID? Because that's what this doctor's using it for. And all of a sudden I realized, no, they have not been encouraging people to use monoclonal antibodies.
Right.
In fact, now in January of this year, just a few months later, they've now banned the majority of all monoclonal antibodies from the entire country for COVID-19. So I started in middle of December realizing, while I was in the shower, that the CDC, NIH, and FDA all say do not use monoclonal antibodies. They don't want any early treatment. They just want you to go into the hospital and get remdesivir. There is no other early treatments that are really encouraging. I then realized also that there was a truth for me already established. I didn't trust anything the FDA, CDC, or NIH has been saying surrounding COVID. In fact, it's almost the opposite. They tell you to go get remdesivir. I keep telling people don't do it. They keep saying to do it. Then they tell you not to seek early treatment. They tell you not to use monoclonal antibodies. And I keep saying you should be doing the opposite of whatever they say. So immediately when I realized that those federal health agencies, have been banning and punishing doctors for using monoclonal antibodies, and now since have taken it away from everybody, I wondered if there was a truth behind, could it possibly be that if monoclonal antibodies are a source or form of an antivenom, or made as an antivenom, is it possible that the monoclonal antibodies are working with COVID-19 because there might be a venom component to COVID-19? And in my 50 minutes or so, or hour or so, being in the shower, I mean, I went through everything related to COVID in an hour. My next thought was, there's a quick way to see if there's ever been any discussion or maybe even a truth behind that COVID-19 could be related to snakes or snake venom that would warrant the FDA, CDC, and NIH not wanting you to use monoclonal antibodies. Okay? This is where my brain went. So all I decided was, you know, every time I talk about remdesivir, anytime Paul Merrick from FLCCC.net talks about monoclonal antibodies, even with Senator Ron Johnson, they fact check our claims. USA Today and Associated Press has done it with me. Medscape and MedPages did it with Paul Merrick. They always will fact check things that are actually true to divert individuals back to the narrative they want you to see in the media.
Yes.
So the very first thing I thought was, I'm going to get out of the shower and I'm going to go see, was there any reference early on that the possible origins of SARS-CoV-2, that they now designate the disease process as COVID-19, could it possibly be that snakes were ever a thought or a published possible source for SARS-CoV-2? And
you mean that it was a cross-species infection, that it grew in snakes or it spread in snakes?
All I wanted to know was,
spread to humans, or what are you saying?
Yeah, so what I've heard nonstop for the last 2 years is it's cross contamination from bats to
right.
humans,
that's
right?
So, or pangolins, as you have
so,
here.
So really, all I wanted to know was, is it true then that there was ever a reference in the media that snakes could have been a source as they were trying to figure it out? And then was it ever fact-checked? That's what I wanted to know.
Okay.
Like, was it ever fact-checked?
What did you find?
Because nonstop for 2 years, all I've heard about is bats. Yeah, everyone's okay talking about bats. It comes from bats. Everybody's allowed to talk about bats.
Well, bats are mammals.
But did they ever look at snakes? So this set me down a huge rabbit hole that at times it's been scary, anxiety-creating, and it's time to show you what I learned and what I figured out. Okay,
let's do it.
So you've got the clicker.
Yep, let's do it. We're on slide one.
This is slide one here. So what we're going to do is we're just going to show you what I've learned. So at the top of these slides, you will see a date, actually a month and a year. This is very early on in the pandemic, January 2020. This is in Healthline magazine online. And it actually says, where did the new coronavirus come from? Potentially a bat, snake, or pangolin. And I remember reading this one article. This is the first one I pulled up. And I remember thinking, they actually thought it might come from snakes? Like, I never knew this. I never saw this. Uh-huh. I wasn't paying attention to this early on. Remember, my whole thing with COVID started in May of 2020. So by the time this came out, I was 5 months late. Okay? This was in January. And you'll see on the right-hand side of the article, fact-checked by Kay Castle. And I was like, oh, my gosh, they did fact-check this. Okay, great. Let's go to the next slide. Inside this article on Healthline, this is what we see. Read this here. A new study found the virus may have originated in bats and then spread to humans via a snake or pangolin. Okay? Next slide.
So the snakes could have been carriers and transmitters is what they're saying.
That is what they're saying.
Okay.
All right. So then this professor, Shin Yongi, maybe you can pronounce it better, a professor with the university and member of the research team, told the Xinhua News Service that although previous research found the novel coronavirus originated in bats, the animals hibernate in the winter, making it unlikely that they caused this current outbreak. I found that interesting because when was the first supposed sick people with COVID? It was in October of 2019, right? In the winter. Next slide. This is on CNN Health, January 2020. Snakes could be the source of the Wuhan coronavirus outbreak. As I'm reading through these, I'm like, no way. I had no idea that anyone even mentioned it. All right, so here we go. Next slide. This is very important. This still applies even today, right now. CNN Health on this website, on their site in January 2020. Snakes, the Chinese crate and the Chinese cobra may be the original source of the newly discovered coronavirus. It's triggered an outbreak of a deadly infectious respiratory illness in China this winter. Really. Next slide. But when the researchers performed a more detailed bioinformatics analysis of the sequence of SARS-CoV-2, it suggests that this coronavirus might have come from snakes. Interesting. Next, still in the same article. So did it transfer from bats to snakes, is what they're saying. The researchers used an analysis of the protein codes favored by the new coronavirus and compared it to the protein codes from coronaviruses, Mike. And they found it in different animal hosts, like birds, snakes, marmots, hedgehogs, mantis, bats, and humans. Surprisingly, they found that the protein codes in the SARS-CoV-2 virus are most similar to those used in snakes. Really?
Okay,
next slide.
Interesting.
Here comes the fact-checking. Ready? No. Science News reports in the same month. No. Snakes probably aren't the source of the new coronavirus in China. Yet, let's go in the article. Based on similarities between the virus's codons. Do you know what a codon is? Sequence of three nucleic acids on either mRNA, RNA, or DNA chain. Three nucleic acids. Based on the similarities between the virus's codons and those of its potential animal hosts, quote, snake is the most probable wildlife animal reservoir for the 2019 SARS-CoV-2. The researchers write. And then they say, we and his team suggest a virus from the mini banded crate, or Chinese cobra, may have combined with a bat virus and sparked the new outbreak. SciTech Daily, same month. Look what they even call it.
Snake pneumonia?
Snake pneumonia.
Are you kidding me?
No. Snake, look, January 22nd, 2020. Coronavirus outbreak in China traced to snakes by genetic analysis. Really? Finally, the team uncovered evidence in this article that the SARS-CoV-2 likely resided in snakes before being transmitted to humans. recombination with the viral receptor binding protein may have allowed for cross-species transmission, like you mentioned a second ago. Is that what they were expecting? From snakes to humans. I don't know how many snakes cough on people to give them their infections.
That's what I'm wondering. Who's hanging out with snakes?
I don't know. Results derived from our evolutionary analysis or origin analysis suggest for the first time that snake is the most probable wildlife animal reservoir for this 2019 SARS-CoV-2. Is this surprising to you? Did you know this?
No, this is really shocking because this has been erased, really, from any discussion.
No one
about
is talking
origins.
About this.
Right. No, it was always bats or just random animals, pangolins, what have you. All right, next one.
Next slide.
Marmots, that's a surprise. You got to stay away from those marmots, man.
And hedgehogs.
And hedgehogs, yeah.
Humans are playing around with hedgehogs too often. All right, so in the same month, this is what they are referencing in these articles, is what they've suggested the original origins of SARS-CoV-2 came from snakes. They compared it to bats. I'm going to take you into this because there's aspects of this research study that everyone needs to know, because it is very clear from this one study that snakes are the origin of SARS-CoV-2.
Wait a minute. Doesn't this mean that the gain-of-function research could have maybe taken something from snakes and then augmented it?
Oh, yes.
Is that where this is going?
Yep. That's exactly where it's going.
Wow.
Which is not what anyone has been told.
Right.
All right, so January of 2020, published, origin of COVID-19, cross-species transmission of the newly identified coronavirus. Remember, I knew none of this until December of 2021. Okay. Next slide. Here we go. Inside the body of this research study, two types of snakes containing the Bungaro multisynctus, which is the mini-banded crate, and then the Chinese cobra were used for RSCU analysis, where they're actually getting their gene sequences and comparing it to SARS-CoV-2. Squared Euclidean distance between the 2019 SARS-CoV-2 and the crate was 13.54. The distance between SARS-CoV-2 and another snake, which is Naja Atra, which is the king cobra, is 16.69.
And for people watching, the lower that number, the more similar the genetic code is.
That's exactly right. Yeah. I did not know this. I had to learn all this.
Well, Euclidean distance is squared. Yeah.
I love hanging out with geniuses.
Geometry, yeah.
I really had no idea what that meant. I was like, what in the world is that?
Yeah, so anyway, what they're saying is that this is the most similar genetic sequence that they could find.
Exactly right.
Snakes.
Yep. And then they actually compared it to a whole bunch of animals, like hedgehogs and manis and humans even.
Right, right.
And they actually plot on the graph here. Next slide.
Okay. Oh, wow.
They actually
and
plot.
There it is. I see. Wow.
They plot which one it's most identical to. Bungaroo, or Bungarus, is the crate snake.
Wow.
Cobra, and then bats, and then chickens. It looks like a polar bear. I don't know what that is.
That's the marmot right there, yeah.
And then the human, hedgehogs, and whatever else.
Wow.
When I saw this, I couldn't believe it because this is not what we've been told. We have been told it is bats, and they keep directing people to bats. Fauci in May of 2020 is right. Talking about the sources of bat. Okay. Just want everybody to see that. This summary in the conclusion we're going to spend a few minutes on because there's a few statements in here that people need to know the definition for. When I say that I am confident that the origins of SARS-CoV-2 is from snakes, this tells you it is. So here we go. In summary, the results derived from our evolutionary analysis suggest that SARS-CoV-2 has most similar genetic information with bat coronavirus and has most similar codon usage bias with snake. Now, I am not a geneticist, but the very last part of this sentence says SARS-CoV-2 has most similar codon usage bias with snake.
Mm-hmm.
Next slide. First, I had to know what's
a codon.
This
is going, yes.
What's a codon? Because I didn't know. I was like, what's a codon? So I went to the National Institutes of Health, their Genome Research Institute. All right, codon, you'll see down here at the bottom. This is a sequence like on an mRNA chain. It's three nucleic acids clumped together in order. It explains to you what it is. Now, That's what a codon is, just a sequence of three nucleic acids. Now, codon usage bias is the term I wanted to know. I just copied codon usage bias. Next slide. And I want to know, what in the world does codon usage bias mean? You can see it behind me. I'll read it to you. This is published in November 2021. Codon usage bias reflects the origin, mutation patterns, and evolution of the species or genes. Just read up to the first comma. Codon usage bias reflects the origin. If we go to the slide I was just at, next slide, what we just read was, last part of the sentence, SARS-CoV-2 has the most similar codon usage bias with snakes.
Yes.
So we know its origin is most similar and connected to snake origin.
And allow me to just explain to the audience as well, different species have a different tendency of the way they arrange their genetic code. That's what codons are. So the same goals genetically can be accomplished with many different codon patterns. So what you're pointing out here is that the codon usage bias indicates snake as the origin. I want to tell people that's a fingerprint. That's actually a fingerprint because those codon sequences can't come from humans because human DNA isn't encoded the same way. It's very far from snake DNA because, you know, reptiles versus mammals and, you know, the whole evolutionary history and whatever. But this is bombshell that you have here.
This is January of 2020.
Wow.
The first month of the pandemic supposedly in America, or referenced even in America. All right, let's go to the next slide. Now it's time to get into, is there any talks I wanted to know in 20? I'm just going to go into this. Ready?
Is this the same slide? Phospholipase enzymes?
It is.
Okay, great.
So this is in January of 2021. We are now going to piece together the entire narrative of COVID-19. When I say, and I want to go ahead and introduce this now, there isn't an aspect of COVID-19, its symptoms as a disease or an infection, none of the symptoms or side effects of remdesivir, none of the side effects or adverse events, serious or minor, from the mRNA vaccines, that cannot be linked to snake venom poisoning.
Whoa.
All of it is related, and I'm going to show you.
Okay, so wait a second.
This is
a huge bombshell. So you're saying if you look at the neurological symptoms, the blood clotting, oh my gosh, blood clotting, that's how snake venom destroys tissue. It clots the blood.
Exactly right.
And snake venom is a protein. It's a very long, large protein, and that's what causes the tissue necrosis, right? You get bit by a rattlesnake,
yes.
It's tissue necrosis, and that's what's happening to people who are getting the vaccine.
Exactly right.
Whoa.
Trust me, by the time we're done with this interview, every aspect of COVID,
even
beyond our other interviews I've done so far, you're going to see even more evidence to support every aspect of what they tell you is SARS-CoV-2 viral infection, everything they call a side effect that led to mortality from COVID-19 in hospitalized patients, which is with remdesivir. Every side effect listed by the FDA, the CDC, the NIH, NVAERS,
whoa,
CMS data, all of it can be tied directly to snake venom poisoning.
Okay, Dr. Artis, okay, now you got my brain running because this means that the mRNA gene therapy alterations are injecting people with instructions to manufacture snake venom in their own cells. So their bodies are snake venom factories.
That's exactly what's going on. And the two individuals who created the mRNA vaccines work at the University of Pennsylvania, David Weissman and a lady named Cataline. They have since 2011 been taking mRNA from snake venom and figuring out how to inject it into the cells and into the DNA of cow's cells. And they used venom mRNA to do it. And I'm going to show you that's what they're doing right now. And yes, when they talk about replicating spike proteins, no, you're replicating snake venom peptides.
Whoa.
Or proteins.
Whoa.
And it just continues to replicate throughout your body.
But then this also explains why monoclonal antibodies then work.
Exactly.
Because it's an anti-venom.
Yes, and I am not one who's going to sit back and go, I was wrong, or I wasn't wrong about anything. I'm always right. I immediately knew, even in the shower, if I go and find information that anti-venom is monoclonal antibodies, I was wrong in my speaking because monoclonal antibodies would work. Do you know how they actually make monoclonal antibodies and anti-venom for most snake venom?
No, I don't.
They take the venom of a snake in a syringe, and they shoot it into a horse. And then they collect the blood from the horse, extract the antibodies that the horse made against the actual venom, and that's monoclonal antibodies they inject into you as antivenom.
Whoa.
I'm about to show you evidence that they did this with COVID-19, supposed virus proteins.
Okay.
It's pretty amazing.
You're blowing my mind again.
Yes, I am. All right, so here we go. When it comes to all the side effects related to SARS-CoV-2 infection that individuals deal with, this term called phospholipase enzymes are noted as a premier marker or indicator of SARS-CoV-2 infection. Okay? You've got the virus inside of you. Now your body's elevating these phospholipase enzymes. This is in January of 2021. Phospholipase enzymes as potential biomarker for SARS-CoV-2 virus. Let's go on. Now, in the same article, it says that these phospholipase, among them, SPLA2 phospholipase A2 is the first discovered group of phospholipase enzymes, which was discovered in a component of cobra venom. This is where they found this stuff. Go back to the screen before.
Whoa.
It actually says phospholipase enzymes are potential biomarkers for SARS-CoV-2. But this were originally discovered in cobra venom. Isn't that crazy? All right. Let's keep reading the parts I've actually highlighted. A Lapidae and viper family snakes having SPLAT group 1A, 2A, 2B as the main component in snake venom. Snake venom, phospholipases, induce pathophysiological alterations in the victim by hydrolyzing phospholipids in membranes.
Whoa, so cell rupturing.
All the hemorrhaging you see in the lungs of SARS-CoV-2 patients, this is
exactly
what it is.
That. Right.
The snake doesn't inject its venom into your lungs. They put it into your veins or into your bloodstream. And then it actually makes the alveoli sacs in your lungs hemorrhage.
Right, which shows up on the imaging that the doctors are doing.
And they're calling it what? COVID pneumonia.
Yeah, right. Right.
Like the snake pneumonia you saw up here? Snake That's what pneumonia. They're seeing, actually.
Unbelievable.
Next slide. What is the role of this phospholipase in lung infections and related respiratory problems? Remember, they found this in cobra venom originally. There is some evidence that the elevated PLA2 is in patients with lung infections and respiratory problems. Pulmonary surfactant is important. By lowering surface tension along the alveolar epithelium, destruction of the surface tension will result in lung injury called acute respiratory distress syndrome.
That sounds real familiar because that's what we were told.
That's what we were told it was.
Right.
All of SARS-CoV-2 and COVID-19. Most similar to acute respiratory distress syndrome.
Yes.
Oh, really? But the cobra venom phospholipases does this. The same thing they just said is a biomarker for SARS-CoV-2.
Wow.
Oh, it gets worse. Don't worry. Here we go. Next slide. When I go through some of these, you're going to also realize why it is that the FDA, CDC, NIH, World Health Organization, United Nations all said and interjected and said, you cannot suggest nutritional supplements for COVID-19 as an early treatment because they know it works against snake venom. I'm going to show you one right here. In this same article, it says, we're talking about SARS-CoV-2 here, while both men and women have the same prevalence of SARS-CoV-2 without any gender discrimination, men are more susceptible to face more complications and death. Study was evidence that the inverse correlation of SPLA2, which is found in snake venom also, activity with vitamin C concentration in COVID-19 patients.
Uh-huh.
Interestingly, vitamin C concentration in the blood is lower in males than in females, hence the link between increased severity in men. It also links with the severity of COVID-19 in males with the correlation of increasing SPLA2 phospholipase activity and the decrease in vitamin C content. Another study was revealed that increasing rates of PLA2 were positively correlated with not only viral loads in the patients with COVID-19, but also severity of pneumonia in non-COVID-19 patients. Therefore, it could be suggested that increased levels of this in the blood could provide insights to higher mortality was seen in patients with underlying comorbidities. Now, you've heard all along that individuals who have comorbidities are more targeted.
Right.
I have proof, and I can show you research like this, that these enzymes found in snake venom target the pancreas of individuals with inflammatory pancreatic disorders, which are what? Diabetes,
right.
Any of the type of diabetes,
mm-hmm.
heart conditions or inflammatory heart issues, liver, kidneys, lung, brain. And these snake venom components target those tissues exactly. And this is an example of that.
I mean, this is just stunning, but I need to point out, they say that increasing levels were correlated with viral loads in patients, but how are they testing viral loads is PCR, which means they could be just spotting cells that are being killed, the exosomes of the cells.
Could be.
That have been destroyed by the venom.
Very well could be. But do you know I have research for like 20-plus years that they've been using PCR testing to actually sequence the genes of all snake venom research?
No, did not know that.
And holy cow, what are they using the whole time to look for SARS-CoV-2? The same. They're using PCR tests that are known successfully to replicate, magnify, through cycling, venom proteins and peptides. For decades they've been using it. And what if they're really just finding snake protein peptides or enzymes with a test that's done that for the last 30 years they know?
But this is also the ultimate bioweapon, because it's something that can be blamed on animals, right? So maybe they took it from animals, they took it from reptiles, they augmented it with gain of function. They made it spreadable, or maybe they spread it themselves, a couple of different ways to do that, and then they diagnose it, they just give it a different name. But it's the ultimate bioweapon.
It's actually one of the oldest in history biological weapons. It's in nature. I mean, poison dart frogs, snake venoms. I mean, we've used venoms from animals for years in war. I just want people to notice and recognize that this enzyme found in cobra venom in this study, early on where they were talking about phospholipases and these enzymes, are directly correlated to significance of COVID-19 and severity of COVID-19. And it's,
can I ask you a different question? I mean, I'm sorry to interrupt. This is stunning. What about ivermectin? Why does ivermectin work? Are you going to get to that?
Yep, I sure am.
Okay, cool. All right. I won't interrupt you.
I sure am. Yep, we're going to get there. Everything they told you not to use, by the way,
works.
And are punishing people. Every single one of the things they say you cannot use and they're threatening doctors' licenses with is already proven to inhibit snake venom peptides and proteins.
Unbelievable.
And I'm talking for like 30, 40 years.
Wow.
For example, do you know that the blood clotting effect of a snake venom, vipers, can be blocked with N-acetylcysteine? And they've known it for years.
That's why they're pulling it off the market.
That's why the FDA in May of 2020 was like, this is no longer going to be sold as a supplement. It can now only be sold as a prescription drug. Yes, this is exactly why they did that. For example, and when I say all of them, all the things you keep hearing you're not allowed to use, they actually inhibit the effects of snake venom peptides and proteins. All of them.
Unreal.
Very good.
All right, Amazon pulled all the NAC off the market, too.
I want you to read the title of this University of Arizona's publication.
Like venom coursing through the body, researchers identify mechanism driving COVID-19 mortality. They're just telling you what it is, huh?
In your face. You don't even know it. You're not even looking.
Unbelievable.
Like venom coursing through the body.
An enzyme related to neurotoxins found in rattlesnake venom? That's the subhead.
I know. All right, so let's get into the article. Ready? Let's see what it says.
All right.
So this is actually the real study. I printed it and then I highlighted some stuff. Here we go. Del Poeta and his team collected stored plasma samples and went to work analyzing medical charts and tracking down critical clinical data from 127 patients hospitalized at Stony Brook University Hospital between January and July of 2020.
Here we go. Okay, sorry.
Here we go. Sorry about that. All right, so they collected 127 patients, you'll see, who were hospitalized at this hospital between January and July of 2020. They went through all their charts. And there's also some at the Stony Brook and Banner University Medical Center in Tucson between the same period. Next slide. University of Arizona, Stony Brook University, and Wake Forest altogether analyzed blood samples from two COVID-19 patient cohorts and found that circulation of the enzyme secreted phospholipase A2 Group 2A or SPLA2.
Oh my gosh.
May be the most important factor in predicting which patients with severe COVID-19 eventually succumb to the virus.
And it gets, what's in the venom, yeah.
Yeah, look, read the next sentence. The SPLTA2 enzyme, which has similarities to an active enzyme in rattlesnake venom, is found in low concentrations in healthy individuals and has long been known to play a critical role in defense against bacterial infections, destroying microbial cell membranes. When the activated enzyme circulates at high levels, it has the capacity to shred the membranes of vital organs. And then read down below, this enzyme is trying to kill the virus, destroying the patient's cell membranes and thereby contributing to multiple organ failure and death. Now, there's a couple things I have to pinpoint here. They got tissue samples from people who were hospitalized and treated for COVID-19 in hospitals. What do they all have in common being pumped into their veins? Remdesivir.
Right.
When I saw this, they even give you the numbers of how elevated these snake enzymes are in their blood. The number one side effect listed in Gilead, who owns remdesivir, they did a study that was published in March of 2020. They gave remdesivir for 10 days to 53 COVID-19 patients. The number one reported serious adverse event was multiple organ failure. I want you to look and see what this says here.
Uh-huh,
this
right.
enzyme.
Multiple organ failure.
And death. I am convinced remdesivir, actually, before we even go any further, I'm actually convinced that remdesivir is actually lyophilized or freeze-dried, powderized king cobra venom. And I'm going to tell you how I got there. And I think they're just pumping it into your veins in hospitals.
All right, what you just said, Dr. Artis, is pretty freaky. I mean, that's a huge claim. That's a claim that the medical system is carrying out coordinated mass murder. It doesn't mean that the doctors administering remdesivir would be aware of this, by the way, right? They may have no clue, but look at who was behind the approvals of remdesivir, who's been pushing it. Fauci, for one, right?
Oh, yeah.
But you're saying that you believe people are being injected with freeze-dried cobra venom that has been approved by the FDA as a drug. As an antiviral.
Mm-hmm.
And would this explain then the kidney failure that happens and organ failure and
I'm gonna show you.
Death? And what about the fluid buildup in the lungs and everything?
Yes, I'll show you.
Okay,
all
okay.
Of
I'm sorry. I'm getting ahead.
No. This is why when you look at the actual known side effects and what happens to individuals in hospitals when they get remdesivir.
Yeah.
And like this Arizona study, when you look at the tissue samples, they see these high elevated amounts of stuff that's in rattlesnake venom. Snake venom.
Wow.
In these people who have died after being treated in hospitals. They're all being treated with remdesivir. All of them. That's the only antiviral being pumped into all their veins. During those periods, they selected them.
If this is true, by the way, let me just say, this is some kind of satanic serpent mass death thing. This is like actual satanic. There's got to be something about this mentioned in the Bible in the end times about venom coursing through people's bodies and killing them. You're nodding like you're going to talk about something like that.
That's how we're going to wrap up the interview.
Oh, okay. All right, well, I'm sorry to get ahead here.
No, it's great because you're putting it all together.
Yeah.
It's just a massive unraveling of things. Everything related to COVID you've been lied to about.
Oh, yeah.
All of it. And I mean all of it.
We've been lied to about everything, man. History, money,
all of it.
Elections,
mm-hmm.
You name it. Okay, continuing.
All right, so further into this study, talking about this phospholipase for as causing SARS-CoV-2 and ramifications of that. Let's read into this. Ready?
Okay.
Previous research has shown how the enzyme, phospholipase, destroys microbial cell membranes and bacterial infections, as well as its similar genetic ancestry with a key enzyme found in snake venom. The protein shares a high sequence homology to the active enzyme in rattlesnake venom. And like venom coursing through the body, it has the capacity to bind to receptors at neuromuscular junctions and potentially disable the function of these muscles. Roughly a third of people develop long COVID, and many of them are active individuals who can't walk 100 yards. The question we're investigating now is, if this enzyme is still relatively high and active, could it be responsible in part for the long COVID outcomes that we're seeing? And the answer is yes. All right, next slide.
I've always known that the phrase long COVID was a cover story for something else. They just gave it a name.
Okay. So... Yeah. This is where we're going to get into this is not a stretch. This is where we're going to get into the entire narrative of COVID-19 and why I believe remdesivir, made by Gilead, is actually king cobra venom. Ready? Nature Genetics. Look at the publication date, January of 2020. This actual study is titled The Indian Cobra Reference Genome and Transcriptome that Enables the Comprehensive Identification of Venom Toxins. Ready? In the abstract, just read the highlighted part. Among the 139 toxic genes were 19 significant, by the way, 19 venom-ome specific toxins that showed venom gland specific expression. This is published January of 2020. There's been a 10-year-long study mapping out the gene sequences of the toxins in king cobra venom, and they isolate that there's 19 venom-specific toxins that are derived from the internal organs of the snake that destroy the internal organs of a mammal.
Right.
19. Now, I'm going to hammer on this 19 thing because when I saw it, I was like, oh my God, could it be true that COVID-19 has nothing to do with the year? Could it be totally related to this 19 figure of these venom-like toxin proteins? This same information was found by Dr. Brian Fry in Australia in 2005. He found 19 venom-specific toxins in 2005. Do you remember what was going around the world in the Middle East?
There was a bird flu thing, was it?
Nope. Do you remember something called SARS-CoV-1?
Oh, no, that wasn't very big.
It wasn't very big.
Uh-uh.
Nope. But it's ironically in the same year that this guy published the 19 here. I'm actually convinced that when they did the research in 2005 with Dr. Brian Fry's work, that they knew they could set up this 19 toxins and use it the year 2019 as a cover, and they spent the next 15 years preparing for COVID-19.
Wow.
I actually call COVID-19 COVID-19 for these 19 toxins, actually. All right, so let's go in further into this. This is the published study, January 2020, Indian Cobra Reference Genome. It's likely that these genes, together with the 19 venom-specific toxins, form the core toxic effector components of the venom and induce a wide range of symptoms, including cardiovascular dysfunction, which remdesivir does, muscular paralysis, nausea, blurred vision, and systemic effects such as hemorrhage.
How much you want to bet that also includes ringing in the ears, tinnitus, other neurological?
All of it. All the neurotoxicity symptoms are related to
tingling
snake venom.
Tingling of limbs, right?
Absolutely.
Whoa.
All right. Here is actually, in the study, they actually list a picture, a graphic.
It's all right here.
And respiratory
snake venom.
This is cobra venom, specifically.
Cobra venom.
Respiratory difficulties.
Oh, my gosh.
Neurological symptoms, dizziness, headaches. You were just talking about those.
Yep.
Blood coagulation, anticoagulation. Look at this, systemic hemorrhage.
Yep.
Yeah, no kidding. Local tissue damage, paralysis, hypotension, sudden shock, low blood pressure, vasodilation, the 19 venom toxins. This is from king cobra venom. This is what it does in the human or mammal body.
This explains why athletes are passing out.
This explains why they are dying on the field.
Yes.
Okay, next slide.
All right.
I want to bring this to your attention. This is from a different study done in 2015. Kidney injury is among the most common and most serious symptoms of cobra venom. Do you know how many people in the hospitals being treated with remdesivir out the gate, they said and reported in the media, we've never seen such acute kidney failure with a respiratory virus? And everyone was being pumped full of remdesivir.
Absolutely, yeah.
Same side effects. You showed the graphic. We now see acute kidney injury. Most common side effect of cobra venom going into the body. Imagine if that's
we'll
all
be right back
injecting
after
right
this
into your
break.
Vein. It's insane.
They're just lining you up, injecting you with venom, calling it medicine, calling it treatment.
Exactly right.
And outlawing everything else.
Oh yeah.
By the way.
So I want to.
That works.
Yeah, and I want to take you through this. This was actually in July of 2020. This is 2 months after remdesivir was assigned the contract for all hospitalized COVID-19 patients in America by Dr. Anthony Fauci.
Yep.
He gave Gilead the green light to be the only antiviral being pumped into all COVID-19 hospitalized Americans. This is 2 months later. This study comes out. This has bugged me ever since I saw it. Let's read it together, this first part of the abstract, because this is where I stopped reading when I read it originally. COVID-19 is most well known for causing substantial respiratory pathology. It can also result in several other than lung manifestations. These conditions include thrombotic complications. They're talking about the virus only. COVID-19. The virus can cause thrombotic complications, myocardial dysfunction and arrhythmia, acute coronary syndromes, acute kidney injury, gastrointestinal symptoms, and hepatocellular injury. Hepatocellular means liver toxicity. Next slide.
So it means this venom is going throughout your body and ripping apart the cells of all your organ systems, leading to organ failure.
Yes, and I was just blaming it on the toxicity of remdesivir from this study. Uh-huh. But I want to go into this study that was published in Nature Medicine in July of 2020. Okay. Because there's something significant here that's different between China and America when we first started treating COVID-19 patients. All right, so inside of this same article or research study on what SARS-CoV-2 does in the body, they actually mention here and publish that there's renal manifestations, which means kidney disease or problems. But this is, I've pointed this out in many lectures and to senators and state reps around the country in relationship to remdesivir. We in America were using remdesivir. China wasn't. So you're going to look at the statistics here between SARS-CoV-2 and those in China and those in America. Ready? In China, this is in July 2020. In China, the reported incidence of acute kidney injury in hospitalized patients with COVID-19 ranged from 0.5% to 29%. And that incidence of acute kidney injury occurred within an average of 7 to 14 days of treatment in the hospital. So it took about a week to 2 weeks for that to even start to show up in their blood work. Studies from the U.S. have reported much higher rates of acute kidney injury. In a study with nearly 5,000 patients admitted in New York City with COVID-19, acute kidney injury occurred in 37% of them, with 14% of all of them requiring dialysis. And about one-third were diagnosed with acute kidney injury within how long?
24 hours of admission, and they were being treated with remdesivir.
They were being pumped full of remdesivir within the first 24 hours.
Wow.
And that's when the acute kidney injury kicked in.
Unreal.
Now, this study gets even more disgusting for me. When I read this stuff, I was like, you know what? July of 2020, Gilead, the maker of remdesivir, has been awarded the only contract. How come it is that every single side effect in here of SARS-CoV-2 in this article is identical to remdesivir side effects? Did they invite Gilead to be a part of this compilation of SARS-CoV-2 side effects? They could hide all of their known side effects of the drug in this study. That the whole world in July of 2020, every doctor treating COVID patients would be like, we're seeing kidney failure, liver failure, heart failure. We're seeing strokes, hemorrhaging all over the body. And they would look into the scientific literature to see, is this a side effect of SARS-CoV-2?
Right. Instead of blaming the drug.
Instead of blaming the drug they're pumping into the veins.
Yes.
So I looked at the funders of this study, and it's like 7 departments of the World Health Organization. But we need to get into this. Look at the ethics declarations page. Look who was invited to participate and what company they're on the payroll for. In the conflicts of interest for this Nature Medicine in July of 2020, JMB, her name is Joan, reports an honorarium for participation on grants reviews for Gilead Sciences, who makes remdesivir. How is it possible that the NIH allowed someone from Gilead to combine and add up and total and summarize all the side effects of the virus? Their drug is the only drug being allowed to treat. I call this a mighty conflict of interest.
Of course.
Okay. Yeah. Next slide. In the Indian King Cobra study, it actually references that they have there's a conflict of interest with this study that published in January of 2020 with the 19 venom-specific toxins. It says here that the employees of Genentech, they hold Roche stock or shares. Next slide. And I was like, Genentech? What's that got to do with Genentech? I just want you guys to remember this one thing. These phospholipases that I showed you earlier in a study in COVID-19 patients was first discovered in cobra venom. So if you go back to the last slide, in that cobra study, Genentech, employees of Genentech, who ran the whole study on King Cobra venom, they just said they have conflict of interest maybe with this study because they own shares of Roche. And I had to figure out, well, who the heck is Genentech? Just remember here, among these phospholipases, is the first discovered group of PLA2 enzymes, which was discovered as a component of cobra venom. Genentech just completed a study on cobra venom and discovered 19 different venom-specific toxins. So then I wanted to know, what does Genentech and Gilead have in common? Gilead makes remdesivir. Is there any connection of Gilead to possibly Genentech, who's declaring a conflict of interest in a king cobra venom study they published in January of 2020? Oh, my God. Imagine my surprise. Gilead Sciences to purchase biological process research and clinical manufacturing facility from Genentech in 2011. So then I started to see, oh, in 2011, they bought and brought in facilities, biological facilities, from Genentech. Next slide. Gilead today announced that the company has signed a definitive agreement under which Gilead will purchase a clinical biologics manufacturing facility and certain process development assets located in Oceanside, California, from Genentech. Next slide.
A member of the Roche Group.
Member of the Roche Group. Next slide. As part of this acquisition, we're going to bring 55 current Genentech clinical manufacturing and process development employees will be offered employment at Gilead. This is since 2011. All employees joining Gilead from Genentech will be working in the OCP facilities, their biological facilities. Do you know that Genentech, right now, they have 7 patented cancer drugs that are all derived from snake venom? Whoa. Genentech.
But that's, you're saying, like, that's well known. That's,
oh, yeah.
That's very public knowledge.
Very public.
Because it kills cancer cells. As snake venom is good at doing
it
cells.
Is. Yes. Absolutely. Yep. I couldn't believe.
While your tumor shrinking.
Exactly right.
Gosh, we're here in Texas. We can get snake venom under any rock for free. There's a snake there.
Just, you know, snake venoms, specific snake venoms can either cause blood clotting or blood thinning to lead to hemorrhage, right? Or blood clots leading to strokes. Either one can lead to strokes.
Right.
They also have this impact, some venoms, to increase tumor growth and cancer growth, and then other venoms reduce it or shut it off.
Wild.
In fact, most cancer drugs, they're just manipulating your body with snake venom. I have learned since then. It's pretty crazy.
Chemotherapy, huh?
Right. All right, so here we go. Remember this. February 2015, just like SARS-CoV-2, is that a coincidence? The venom phospholipase A2 is probably the key factor responsible for tissue injury by disturbing cell membrane permeability through disorganizing of lipid bilayer on the plasma membrane. And it goes into renal injury. You'll see the bottom down here. Renal injury as a result of this venom PLA2, just like SARS-CoV-2. In February of 2015, it was found that cobra venom, this is specific for cobra venom, pulmonary tissues of control mice showed the normal and compact organization. This is the control mice that don't get the venom. They showed normal compact organization of bronchi, bronchioles, and terminal bronchioles, followed by specialized sac-like structures called alveoli, consisting surface epithelium, blood vessels and supporting tissue surrounded by a double-layer membrane structure called the pleura. Crude cobra venom persuaded some severe changes in their histological structure by showing significant inflammatory cellular infiltration and edema. Do you know every patient who dies from SARS-CoV-2 supposedly in hospitals that gets remdesivir, they die from edema in their lungs?
That's right.
Which is a side effect of crude cobra venom. The organism of envenomated group also showed alveolar hemorrhage and myonecrosis muscle death after 6 hours of envenomation with this dose of cobra venom.
So, wait a second here. So what it was also saying is that the presence of this venom drives sodium and water into the cells, causing edema, but also causing cell toxicity. It does this by modifying the permeability of the cell membranes. And yet, in the hospitals, all these patients are being given a saline solution drip. So they're being given sodium, and then the venom is driving the sodium into their lung cells and rupturing them from the inside.
That's causing the hemorrhage.
So they're actually, it's almost like a binary weapon. They're being given remdesivir and sodium solution.
Absolutely.
Whoa.
And this is why you see that crystallization inside the x-rays of
right. The
lungs of COVID-19 treated patients, not COVID-19 patients, COVID treated patients.
Absolutely. What about some doctors are talking about the discovery of lymphocytes all over the lungs. Couldn't that be what we're looking at here?
They just
call them lymphocytes, or they resemble lymphocytes?
Yep, you're absolutely right.
It's actually ruptured lung cells.
That's exactly what it is. And this is exactly what crude venom does in the body from vipers. I'm just convinced it's the king cobra because of the connection of Gilead Sciences and Genentech, who has been for 10 years studying and mapping out the sequences of the 19 venom toxins from a cobra.
The symbol of the American Medical Association is the caduceus, which is the two serpents intertwined to resemble DNA around a staff. Right? Two serpents.
How many snakes did they find were the original origins most like?
Two
codon
snakes.
Usage bias.
Right, cobras and what was the other one?
Cobras and crates.
Crates
is the most
okay,
similar.
Wow.
Hold on, can I tell you something?
Okay, yeah.
Okay, let's blow your mind. You ready?
Again?
Yeah. In February of 2020, the Wall Street Journal published an article. The author is a guy named Ben Zimmerman. Okay? February of 2020. And he is discussing in the Wall Street Journal, his whole article is, the naming of this pandemic is significant. The name that is chosen. And then he goes through and he's talking about the World Health Organization, the United Nations, the CDC, the FDA. Everybody's trying to come up with a name to stamp on this pandemic and why the name will be significant. And he talks about what the World Health Organization was thinking, what the MHRA and the UK was thinking, FDA, all of them. What all their names were. They said there's only one thing, Ben Zimmerman says, there's only one thing that all the names they're coming up with have in common, and that word is virus. And then Ben Zimmerman, in his article in the Wall Street Journal, says the word virus is significant when it comes to this pandemic. The historical Latin definition for virus is, quote, venom. And if you look at the name coronavirus, corona,
crown of venom.
If you see a crown, what do you think of? Symbolically, either a king or a queen, right?
Uh-huh.
Can you imagine if it actually just simply means king's venom?
King cobra venom.
King cobra venom.
Oh my gosh, with 19 VSTs.
With 19 VSTs.
Oh my gosh.
COV, I'm convinced, means cobra venom. Cobra?
Cobra venom with 19 different toxic molecules.
Yep.
Survival Nutrition is our new free audiobook that you can download right now from survivalnutrition.com. In this nearly 8-hour audiobook.
Now, that was the first of a longer interview with Mike Adams with Dr. Artis. You can link to it on my blog at jamesfetzer.org. But he also did an interview with Stu Peters, and I like that a lot. Now, bear in mind, not everyone is buying into this. Jim Stone, for example, makes the following statement about watch the water, most of which you're going to hear momentarily. Wow, that guy, meaning Dr. Artis, sure took the heat off the Biden administration and Ukrainian biolabs from the guy that brought you air bubbles under a microscope, graphene balls. Now we have snake venom. Yeah. Just forget about the Biden sleeves, right? When Russia is about to nail their biggest lab. It was a Chinese snake. China did it. Well, Jim Jones does a lot of good work, but in my opinion, he just misses the boat. Now, listen to this. Here you're going to have the Watch the Water with Stu Peters. We're starting about 9 minutes in. We won't be able to complete quite all of it, but I like the more informal way it presents, given you already have the technical background. So check this out now, and you can watch and listen to them both on my blog at jamesfetzer.org. Let's go with Watch the Water with Stu Peters and Dr. Brian Artis.
What I'll say now is that my mind was blown, legitimately. I wasn't even sure how to respond except for one thing. I knew the entire world needed to hear what Dr. Artis was saying. And after praying on the topic, I knew that Dr. Artis had to fly to Minnesota again for a special documentary-length interview to bring all of this information before the public. And so we did that. We held that interview, and for the past few weeks, we've been going through more than 4,000 pages of documents, some provided by Dr. Artis, some that we've gathered on our own, all of which support his theory. And all I can say here is the more that we ask questions, the harder that we try to fact-check all of this away, the more our doubts started to feel unreasonable. We know that it's taken a while for this documentary to come out, but since we filmed that interview that's at the center of this documentary, I got swatted. I can't prove it, but I suspect these events are connected. We had to decentralize our production process to make sure that if they took out me or Dr. Artis or one of our editors, that it wouldn't stop this from coming out. It's that important. We had other issues. One of our editors was so distressed by the information in this documentary that they became ill. Another woke up in the middle of the night feeling like some external force was suffocating him, like some kind of a demonic attack. And maybe that sounds too wild to believe, but I want to say something. The way Dr. Artis had described how he started his investigation, all of the circumstances and coincidences that guided him down this path, I believe, I am convinced, and Brian believes, that God has helped guide him through the research process. Maybe that sounds sappy, but it shouldn't. Because the battle that we're fighting is a spiritual battle, more so than physical. This isn't a fight over policy. There is a war being waged in heaven, a war of good versus evil, and that means God versus Satan being played out right here on earth for all of us to witness. Recently, Dr. Zev Zelenko spoke with us. He made an incredible sounding claim. He said that he'd heard from someone who would know that Dr. Artis is the number one doctor that Pfizer wants silenced. Silenced forever. After creating this documentary, all we have to say is that if Dr. Artis really is at the top of an assassination list, we're not surprised. And we think after watching this that you will probably agree. But before we start, though, we wanted to give you a chance to hear a few things from Dr. Artis, and he joins us now. Dr. Artis, thank you for coming, and thank you so much for your bravery.
Stu, it's an honor to be here. I just want to say on behalf of the entire world and you, thank you, everyone who's put any faith and trust in me to be able to convey truth. There is no part of me who brought this information to Stu and started any of this research to create fear and panic. In fact, this is going to, I pray, bring light to all of those practitioners around the world who have already been right. And I want to convey that right now. Dr. Pierre Corey, you were right. Dr. Paul Merrick, you were right. Dr. Ben Marble and Zev Zelenko, you were right. Simone Gold, you were correct. Sherry Timpany, you were right. Everything you're about to learn in this documentary and all the research that I've actually conducted, Dr. Ryan Cole will be able to finally conclude why it is the findings under the slides, under a microscope, have become so monumentally evil. The amount of carnage and disease and death is unparalleled in history. This is the only reason why I'm bringing this to light. I pray that your heart, souls, and minds will be open to truth and know where to go from here to protect your loved ones, your children, your grandparents, your parents, all those you love. I love you. And may God bless everyone on the earth.
So earlier this month, a lot of you may remember a post that I made on my Telegram channel. There was a lot of concern about the water and not to drink it, and there were certain things that I could say and could not say, and I referenced that certain people's lives might be at risk, and one of those people is here with me now, Dr. Brian Artis. Thanks a lot for being here.
I do really appreciate the opportunity to do this. Yeah, this is actually going to be the only time I've ever been nervous in any interview. I'm not kidding. Like, I've never been nervous to discuss anything in relationship to the COVID pandemic whatsoever. But this has bothered me and has scared me.
Putting things out is probably oftentimes the best way to protect yourself. But people have lost their lives over what you're about to tell the world.
I have to get this off my chest. My spirit's like screaming to say something and bring it to the forefront. To protect as many innocent lives as possible. That's all I've been trying to do since May of 2020. As you know, when I read Anthony Fauci's memo on remdesivir, when I actually just hyperlinked, clicked the links to the studies that he was quoting saying that remdesivir was safe and effective, I knew right away that he was lying. I knew right away that this drug was going to be used to mass murder a whole bunch of innocent people in America that did not need to die. Then he was going to sell the world on the idea in the media that they were dying of a virus. when in fact I knew they were being poisoned to death with this drug. I knew 30% of all people were going to experience multiple organ failure, kidney failure, septic shock, and hypotension. That's what the studies said. Now we're a year and a half after that, and it's exactly the numbers that I said based on those studies. I'm pretty much called the Remdesivir guy everywhere I go, which is odd for a retired chiropractor to be referenced as a pharmaceutical guy. But it is true, Remdesivir is a very toxic, deadly drug. There are a lot of medical doctors and professionals who will mention it that as it's just proven to be ineffective. It is not ineffective. It is very toxic and deadly. It is known and proven to actually injure specific organs in your body. It targets specific organs. This is a part of why I think my spirit is so moved to make sure this gets out, is that in January, January 21st of this year, so just 2 months ago, the FDA decided to authorize Remdesivir as the only drug to be authorized to be used in all newborns in this country. I cannot even fathom the men or women in charge that would actually do that. So it's now been moved since January 21st of 2022. It's been moved out of hospitals as the only drug to be used, only allowed in hospitals this entire pandemic. Now they're moving it into in and out of hospital care for children as young as newborns 7 pounds heavy through the 18-year pediatric age range. It's the only authorized drug. There is nothing else that they're allowing for COVID-19 treatment. And I find that incredibly evil. And then they've also now canceled monoclonal antibody uses throughout the United States and all U.S. territories for COVID-19 early treatment, and they're moving Remdesivir to the infusion centers where they were using monoclonal antibodies as the only IV infusion drug allowed. I have been moved with one singular purpose since May of 2020. When I read Anthony Fauci's memo about Remdesivir, I felt this spark inside of me that I now had to go voice to the world a warning to try to protect as many innocent lives as possible from being killed. So let's talk about what happened. It all started with a text. There's a medical doctor that I admire and love because he is nonstop from the beginning of COVID, has had the ability to project information and say to people around the world, you do not have to fear COVID. We have an answer. This guy has been on many stages with me. He still practices right now medicine and is an ER doc. And he sent me a text. It actually was dated December 1st. And I did not see it until like December 18th. I don't know how I didn't see it, but the text read, hey, Dr. Artis, if you got bit by a rattlesnake, would you go to a hospital and get antivenom? And I realized when I saw him that he must have saw an interview I did on InfoWars. So Kate Daly did an interview with me and wanted to go over my thoughts of monoclonal antibodies. Well, I had been given some research studies that actually bothered me. I didn't like the idea based on the data in these research studies. I didn't think monoclonal antibodies were safe long term. Not short term, but long term. Right. Now, I read the actual text message, got in the shower, and while I was in the shower, I was sitting there thinking, why would he send me that text? It has nothing to do with COVID. Like, zero. Nothing to do with COVID. So I'm going through this, and I'm thinking about the text, and all my brain keeps going to is, why is he mentioning, wouldn't I go get antivenom? Is there something about antivenom I don't know? So I actually got out of the shower, went and got on the internet, and I wanted to know what is antivenom? Only to find out that most antivenoms are monoclonal antibodies or polyclonal antibodies. And then I got it. Then I knew why he sent it to me. He wanted me to immediately see a question that he knew I would say, of course I would. If I got bit by a rattlesnake, of course I'm going to go to the hospital and get antivenom. So in his mind, I think he knew this was a way, or God inspired him to send me this message, that
Dr. Artis would be able to relate yes to the answer, then go figure out why it is he would say yes. Okay. This is where it all started. I will repeat what Steve Kirsch said to an audience with me last month. He said, if the CDC says something to do, you do the opposite. If the NIH says to do something, go the opposite. FDA, do the opposite. I'm sitting there realizing that antivenom is monoclonal antibodies, and then I immediately revert back to, in my own head, I'm not trusting anything the CDC, NIH, or FDA says. Is our federal health agencies, are they recommending monoclonal antibodies for COVID-19? Now, this is in the middle of December. No, they're not. They've been bad-mouthing monoclonal antibodies this whole time.
Stripped them out of Florida when DeSantis wanted to use them.
And then January 21st of this year, they totally stripped out monoclonal antibodies. They do not want you touching monoclonal antibodies. They also didn't want you from the beginning to touch hydroxychloroquine.
Yeah.
They also don't want you touching ivermectin. They also don't want you touching NAC,
yes,
and acetylcysteine. So the things they tell you to avoid, we know they're telling you to avoid because they work. So when I realized that the federal health agencies actually were not supporting monoclonal antibodies, I mean, in an instant, I realized I was wrong.
Right.
That the CDC, NIH, and the FDA are bad-mouthing monoclonal antibodies for a reason. They know they work.
And we believe that this is because they want people intentionally to not recover.
Absolutely certain.
Yeah.
No, there's no doubt about that. Oh, no, this is a... This actually got way more evil for me since I read that text than even before I read the text. I cannot believe the amount of evil behind this pandemic with what I've realized since then. I realized all of a sudden that monoclonal antibodies are anti-venom. The federal government doesn't want us using anti-venom. Why are they bashing antivenom, and why are we finding antivenom works against COVID? Is it not a virus? Is it a venom? Like, this is what I want to know. Like, is COVID a venom, and this is why they don't want you using monoclonal antibodies?
I mean, that sounds completely insane as a theory.
It is completely insane.
I mean, how would the masses be infected by snake bites?
Yeah, let me ask you a question. Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Do you believe the mass media is controlled?
Of course.
You actually do believe that?
Yes.
So you believe that whatever's being pumped out in the media is being orchestrated and controlled?
Of course.
Like across all of it?
Across all of it.
Okay, good. All right, so in my head I was like, okay, how do they keep people on that story? So there's this mass media group who are telling a huge story. They're all telling the same story around the world. Whenever anybody says anything against that narrative, what do they use now to combat that in the mainstream media?
Disinformation.
Yeah, they call them fact checkers.
Yeah, fact checkers, yeah.
Fact checking is the opposite of fact checking.
The arbiters of lies are the fact checkers.
By definition, fact checkers are to divert you from truth and take you back to a narrative you're being sold worldwide.
Right.
If it's true, that COVID could actually be snake venom. And how I got there was they don't support the use of anti-venom called monoclonal antibodies,
right,
because they work. The easiest way to figure that out is, has that ever been fact-checked? And I wanted to know, was there ever any mention that the source could have been a snake?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I couldn't believe it. Over and over and over in the media in January and February of 2020 are non-stop publications that the original source could either be from bats, snakes, or pangolins. And every time the snake is mentioned, fact checkers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, constantly fact check it and spin it to the bats. There's no fact checking about bats. They keep letting you look at bats. In the beginning, in January of 2020, the scientists inside of China said this can't be from these bats. These bats hibernate and it's the winter. When they did genetic sequences from the antibodies in the people who were sick in Wuhan, they found that their genetic sequence was not most like bats.
They were most like two snakes. Proteins from the Chinese krait and the king cobra. Then I find in April of 2020, there's a research study published in France where they're finding that the receptors in the brain called nicotinic acetylcholinesterase receptors, that these are actually bound most tightly to snake venom of krait and cobra is what they're finding, and that the spike protein from SARS-CoV-2 is most identical to Chinese krait and king cobra venom. Then I find out that there's an actual doctor who works at the University of Pittsburgh in May.
This is insane.
May of 2020.
Yeah.
Works in a computational lab dealing with genetic sequencing. And he's been researching for 5 months. Sequencing of spike proteins. Trying to solve the mystery of SARS-CoV-2 victims. And he says he's got a big thing to... Big press release. They're going to actually announce all their findings. And Bing Liu is his name.
Setback in the quest to understand coronavirus after a researcher is shot and killed. 37-year-old Bing Liu was on the verge of making significant findings on COVID-19.
And that's when I freaked out. That's when I freaked out. Also, all of the clippings in the media when they interview his boss, who is still at the University of Pittsburgh, last name is Bahar. Every time he was interviewed, he said that they were going to publish the work they found through Bing Liu's work in their department. That's never been published. I'd like to know why. A year and a half later, that's never been published.
A year and a half?
Where is it? And then all of a sudden, the realization came that this is the great lie. When I say that they have lied to you about everything in relationship to COVID, they've even lied about the viral part of COVID. Now, you have to understand here, my entire stance for the last year and a half has been to educate, warn people about hospital protocols because of a drug called remdesivir. So, in this realization that this could all be related to venom, something bothered me in the January 21st EUA that came out from the FDA about remdesivir. In this 42-page document, it actually says there's only one drug that cannot be co-administered with remdesivir at the same time because it negates the antiviral properties of remdesivir. And that drug is hydroxychloroquine. In 2020, January, there's this incredible study that's published where there's been over like a 10-year period where a company has been funding a research study gene mapping all the genes of the venoms and proteins and peptides inside of king cobra venom. And in January 2020, they published their findings. Oh, ask me if I was shocked when I saw that it was 19 toxic venom proteins that they isolated that specifically target organs in your body. So I go to the funding part of this study, and I want to know, well, who funded this and how many companies? It says that the majority of the company's funding and studies funding came from a company called Genentech. Genentech is a subsidiary of a company called Roche. I don't know anything about these companies. Never even heard of them. The employees of Genentech, who were the authors of this study, said they have a conflict of interest because they actually hold shares and stocks in Roche. And all I did was go like this. This is not a joke. I was like, Genentech? I've never heard of Genentech. Is there a correlation between Genentech and Gilead? This is not a joke. I typed it on the internet. Is there a connection to Genentech and Gilead? Oh my God. Gilead bought two facilities that deal with biological studies from Genentech in 2011 and then brought 55 of their executives into Gilead in 2011, just when that King Cobra study started. Gilead is the manufacturer of remdesivir. Guess what's been known since 2005? Blocks the nicotine receptors in the brainstem being injured by cobra venom and viper venom. Guess what drug does that?
Chloroquine.
Hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine. Remdesivir, packaged and stored as it is delivered to hospitals, comes in a little glass vial. It's called lyophilized powder. It actually has a white to yellowish tint. Guess what color snake venom has when it's stored? Then to be diluted in sodium chloride or distilled water to be administered in an IV. Or if people are buying King Cobra venom lyophilized, they mix it in the same preparation as listed on the fact sheet for remdesivir to actually take cobra venom or any other viper venom and inject it into horses to make monoclonal antibodies. When you read the emergency use authorization for remdesivir, it states, this one from January 21st, that every practitioner who administers this to a COVID patient, pediatric or not, you have to evaluate for what's called prothrombin time. Prothrombin time means if it increases the prothrombin time, it means it's taking your blood's ability to coagulate and making it longer. So it thins your blood. You can't clot. You will internally bleed to death. With remdesivir, it is stated on the emergency use authorization, every patient has to have its prothrombin time checked before you give it remdesivir and during treatment. Do you know what King Cobra venom does to the blood?
It makes it so that it can't clot.
It makes it so it can't clot. You know what one of the evidences is? It's prothrombin time. And if you look at the CDC's website and the NIH's website on the adverse events from remdesivir, called Veklury, it actually says it increases prothrombin time, which is exactly what King Cobra venom does to the human body. And remdesivir is lyophilized peptides, proteins of King Cobra venom. The University of Arizona published last summer a paper. When they actually evaluated the blood samples and tissues of people who died, hundreds of them, from two different hospitals, after being treated for COVID, which means they got what drug?
Remdesivir.
When they evaluated their blood, the title of their published article is
Welcome back. Why do some people seemingly perfectly healthy die from COVID and others don't? It's a question baffling experts during this pandemic.
That sure is. A new research from the University of Arizona suggests we're closer to getting an answer. As Team 12's Jess Winters explains, it seems to boil down to an enzyme that's also found in rattlesnake venom.
What does this rattlesnake have to do with COVID-19 deaths?
We turned much of my research in my lab towards COVID a year and a half ago.
Chilton says he got blood samples from more than 100 patients in a New York ICU. They either had no COVID, a mild, moderate, or severe case of the virus. He did some fancy schmancy artificial intelligence in his lab and discovered two distinct patterns in the people who were dying from COVID.
These patterns, number one, told us that the vital organs were in trouble, but the other looked as if they were being attacked by some enzyme.
He says he then found the highest concentration of this enzyme that has ever been found in humans.
These levels attacking internal organs means multiple organ failure and death.
So where do the rattlesnakes come into play?
This enzyme is a humanized version, part of the same family, as the active ingredient in snake venom.
In simple terms, this enzyme related to rattlesnake venom that's been found in humans is likely causing tremendous damage, leading to COVID-19 deaths.
And then they take you through all of the elevated enzymes in the blood samples of these people that are naturally found in rattlesnake venom and viper venom that are in levels they've never seen before. Do you want to know how they got there? 5 to 10 days of remdesivir. They've known since 2005, if you inject a mouse with cobra venom, you inject it like they're doing with remdesivir, injecting into your veins, it actually causes a cytokine storm in the lungs of all animals. I am convinced that COVID-19 is not a respiratory virus of any kind. It is actually venom poisoning, and they're using, I believe, synthesized peptides and proteins from venoms of snakes, and they're administering them and targeting them to certain people. Now, the amazing thing about these 19 toxins found in cobra venom, they're specifically sequenced to target specific organs, like the pancreas in a diabetic, like the heart in a heart disease patient, like the liver in a hepatitis patient.
Wait. So if I die because I'm a cancer patient, or if I die from some sort of liver-related function because I've had liver problems, if I die, then it'll be undetectable. It'll be untraceable. They're going to chalk it up. Of course this diabetic died.
This is the most original of all bioweapons ever. Snake venom. I mean, we know how poisonous snakes are. This is the most obvious bioweapon ever. When I say this is the most evil thing I've ever encountered in my entire life, could you ever have imagined that the one greatest symbol of evil in all of Christendom, what is the symbol of evil in Christianity?
The serpent.
The serpent. Can you think of anything more evil than envenomating the entire world with snake venom and then injecting snake venom into your veins and then using mRNA technology that they've been isolating from snake venom for years that they know are unusually stable, more stable than any other mRNA they've isolated from other natural organisms for decades. 2015, they took mRNA from cobra venom, crate venom, and they actually wrapped the mRNA in nanoparticle hydrogel. How often have you heard about that with these new mRNA vaccines? And they made it even more stable. Then they actually added what's called dynabeads to those nanoparticle hydrogels surrounding the mRNA of snake venom. And it made it even more stable. It made it last longer. It made it easier to get inside of your cells. You know what dynabeads are? Magnetic metal nanoparticles.
Do you have any people paid by the CIA who are working for television networks?
This, I think, gets into the kind of getting into the details, Mr. Chairman, that I'd like to get into in executive session.
I dare say all that ties together because the media has been pushing the vax, pushing the idea of the vast pandemic, pushing the idea of the virus. I say you can watch and see all the slides that were presented on my blog at jamesfetzer.org. Now, I think that Dr. Artis has got it right. A friend who is deep ties to the intel community has told me that perhaps 10 or 12 physicians or experts, scientific researchers who would have sorted out the connection between the cobra venom and the symptoms of the coronavirus were actually taken out before the pandemic over a period of time. Artists could be attacked because he's a chiropractor, but doing so would be committing an elementary fallacy known as a genetic fallacy, or, of course, the ad hominem, where the genetic fallacy judges the truth or falsity of a claim on the basis of its source. That's just a blunder. You might use that or the ad hominem attacking the individual rather than the message with, say, a witness to an automobile accident you might like to discredit. by observing he's a homeless man, you know, is sitting on the street corner. He drinks a lot of wine, you know. That would not mean that on this occasion his testimony or report were not accurate. Of the research I've done, and it's fairly extensive at this point in time, where I did my first review of the coronavirus pandemic, whether it was real or fake, back in May of 2020, which you can access if you go to my blog and look for JimTheConspiracyGuy.com, the 65 shows. It was the very first of the 65 shows I did between May of 2020 and November of 2020. And there may be a lot there you'd find of interest, but the point I'm making is the following. Although I've been reporting on this virtually every single day since March of 2020, sometimes 7 days a week, I think this guy's got it right. And the first part where you heard Mike Adams conversing with Dr. Artis, you can see how extremely sophisticated is Mike Adams. He knows his shit. I'm very impressed with Mike Adams. Dr. Artis was very responsive to him. Stu Peters is doing a lot of good work. I'm impressed with Stu Peters. He's done one great show after another. I do not believe Stu Peters has a level of scientific competence in relation to the coronavirus displayed by Mike Adams. But I wanted to share them both with you because I believe we're beginning to perceive the enormity of the scam that's been perpetrated on the American people and the profundity of the evil intention here. I think there can be no room for doubt that the Rothschild banking empire, which I'm convinced is behind all of this, having bought up the WHO, NIH, the CDC, and the FDA, paying them off fantastic sums. Why not? I mean, it's only money. They have an endless amount of it. They have completely corrupted the agencies that were supposed to protect the American people. We can have no faith in any of them, especially the CDC, with its Rochelle Walensky is just as corrupt as they get, exceeded only by Tony the Rat, where Fauci himself knew, because an article published in Virology, which is a journal of the National Institutes of Health, in 2005 extolled hydroxychloroquine is a wonder drug for coronavirus, that it would cure it if you had it, it would prevent it if you didn't. Ivermectin, of course, has a similar role. It's actually very successful. I have taken both. I even had the monoclonal antibody treatment here at a local hospital when I was hit with what I now presume was some variation on the above. You know, was it a strong form of flu? What was it exactly? I don't know, but I was so weak I couldn't even drag myself out of bed. And I believe I was extremely fortunate that I was given that monoclonal antibody treatment. And meanwhile, a colleague of mine sent me ivermectin, and I think that, you know, enabled me to deal with the issues. You cannot believe any source in the American government today. That is especially true, never been more true than it is under Biden and Harris. There's a monstrous evil cloak has fallen over America. We're in the most desperate straits we have ever been in the history of the nation. We have never been at greater risk. And when you look at the totality of the assaults upon America that the Biden administration has unleashed, opening the borders. There is no border in the United States. They're allowing millions of migrants to enter. They're giving them all kinds of benefit at taxpayer expense. This is going to permanently change the demographics of the United States, and not for the better. permanently change the demographics of the United States. Just as in Europe, the Ukrainian intrusion is going to lead to millions of Ukrainians flooding other parts of Europe. Remember, the creation of the EU meant they no longer required, they were no longer maintaining borders where you needed to have a visa or a passport to enter. Now anyone can go anywhere in the European Union. I believe that the European Union is going to implode. I do believe economically, if they reject Russian gas, they have an unsustainable economy, they will implode. The United States, because the viability of the ruble and the yuan against the American dollar, because Putin brilliantly insisted to buy Russian gas, you have to buy it in rubles, or if you're a friendly country, in your own currency. The viability of the dollar as the reserve community is going to collapse. I think these are all inevitable. The problem is, Mike Adams has been pointing out again and again that our food supply is in jeopardy, that, you know, the loss of the wheat harvest in Russia, which I'm convinced was weather warfare, and now in Ukraine, which has historically been the breadbasket of not just Russia, but much of Europe, is going to have catastrophic results. The situation we're in, it could not be worse. I also believe the Democrats are now staging events like this subway attack in Brooklyn, totally false flag. There's a video about it. I just did a program with David Zublik before coming on the show for today. It was a fabricated event. There are lots of signs, even superficial. For example, they said the number of shots he fired was 33. They said he had an extended magazine. They wouldn't initially identify his race, but he turned out to be black. There just happened to be a videographer there that filmed the whole event when the subway came in, and the video is unwavering, meaning it's not handheld. It's on a tripod. You can see where there's no blood initially, and then a woman is spraying blood down on the ground. You got a woman who's running around who's actually doing, she's the director of the event. You got another woman there with a brown bag who's perfectly fine when she gets off of the subway, but later we find her being loaded on a stretcher and put in an ambulance, totally fraudulent. Why? They got to change the narrative. Everything is so bad for Biden, they're going to fall back on the tide and two. They're going to have more fake staged events. Just in the same tradition as Sandy Hook, this one reminds me the most of Boston bombing. Then we've had Orlando and Dallas. We had Charlottesville, Parkland, Las Vegas, all fraudulent events. If you have any doubt, look, the reason I publish books on this by bringing together the best experts is to make it available to the public. Money has never interested me. When they banned nobody died at Sandy Hook after it had been on sale and sold nearly 500 copies in less than a month, I recognized this was a political decision, and I released a book for free as a PDF. A friend has told me, and it was downloaded as many as 10 million times. I recently questioned him again about that, whether that number could be correct. Maybe he meant 10,000, but no, he said he'd been told by a source in a position to know that book has been extremely popular. That's why they had to bring the lawsuit against me. They had to find some pretext so they could, in essence, go to those who were releasing the book for free and tell them that since a contempt charge had been, a defamation charge had been found against me, that they'd be vulnerable if they were to violate the court's order. That's what it was all about. The whole lawsuit was completely contrived from beginning to end. It was initiated with a complaint that had attached to it a death certificate I'd never seen before, that had a file number, it had a town certification, it had a state certification, and the claim was made in the complaint that there was no material difference between that death certificate and the one which I had published, which had no file number, no town certification, no state certification, which is a legal absurdity. Obviously, file number, state and town certification are material differences. It was just an indication of what was to come. I believe it was so important to get all this evidence into a court that I responded and answered, expressing skepticism even about the individual who was filing against me, because I believe that his son was a fiction made up of photographs of the party supposed to be his older stepbrother, and that the plaintiff actually had the name of Reuben Vabner, not Leonard Posner, that the child shown was not Noah Posner, but Michael Vabner as a child. I was making that clear from the beginning. The court showed the least interest in any of this. At the first conference, scheduling conference, the judge declared that the evidence I had that nobody died at Sandy Hook had nothing to do with the truthfulness or the accuracy of the death certificate, even though the death certificate declared that the party involved had died at Sandy Hook Elementary School on 14 December 2012 of multiple gunshot wounds. This is what I have been up against. I have a tremendous case given the dereliction of the Wisconsin courts, the circuit court, the appellate court, and even the Supreme Court, where the circuit court not only blocked me from introducing the mountain of evidence that was clearly relevant to the issue at stake, but when I produced the reports of two forensic document examiners who supported me, the court simply set them aside as someone else's opinion. Absurd. Expert opinions in a court of law are supposed to have the same status as a judge himself. And a summary judgment, which was issued here, is not supposed to take place if there's any disputed fact. Well, clearly the authenticity of the death certificate remained disputed. I have been unwavering. But I'm not allowed under court order to even say my opinion about the death certificate. The whole trial was simply preposterous. Then the Court of Appeals for the 4th District in Wisconsin not only did not give me a trial de novo, meaning they had to go and review all the documents, all the evidence from the ground up all over again, instead cited the official narrative of Sandy Hook and declared that no one could reasonably doubt that children had died at Sandy Hook, even though one of the forensic document examiners said any reasonable person looking at this death certificate with no file number, no state, and no town certification could reasonably conclude that it was not an authentic document. Those are his words. Obviously, this had to go to a jury, but it did not. The Court of Appeals was derelict. They cited two cases where they'd been resolved on procedural grounds, not on evidential grounds. Mine is the only case that sought to make an issue of whether anybody died at Sandy Hook. I've sought to intervene in other cases to make the point. Even the $73 million Remington settlement is being determined without actually discovering whether or not anybody died at Sandy Hook. So I'm telling you, I'm in this position where I can do something about it. I'm going to the Supreme Court. If you believe in any of the issues, such as the Fifth Amendment, that no citizen of the United States may be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, you may want to lend your support. GiveSendGo.com/funding. Fetzer, I would welcome it. My writ is in the process of being written. I have a brilliant attorney. I have the law on my side. I have the evidence on my side. I need the money to pay for reasons beyond understanding lawyers expect to be paid. So that's where we are today. The sham of the American government is beyond words. I am completely appalled, and I wanted to share with you today what we have in terms of the latest understanding of what's been going on here. God bless American citizens. I can't bless the country because we're becoming a part of this thing. Thanks for being here.
Nation Radio.
Como va? This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect, Triangle, live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The Perfect Triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict, but...